All right, it's close enough to six. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Bruce?
Here.
Councilmember Biggs?
Here.
Councilmember Laraway?
Yes.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you'll join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First item is the consent agenda. Any questions, comments, anything you want pulled for discussion?
I make a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council, please?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Aye.
Councilmember Laraway?
Yes.
And that motion carries. External reports, J&M Sanitation, presentation of contract changes. Chad.
Well,
all right, you may have the floor, sir.
For the record, Mayor and Council members, Chad.
Dang, dude, it's all fancy now, huh?
For the record, Chad Gordon, J&M Sanitation, 680 Swan Falls Road. We are the local contractor for the city of CUNA for trash removal services. And we just wanted to come in front of you guys tonight for a couple things. First and foremost, I wanted to let the mayor and council member know that we do have our upcoming City of CUNA cleanup event. That will be happening the first 2 weeks in May. We'll be doing curbside trash pickup of bulky items, excess stuff, for a two-week period, half the city the first week, half the city the other half of the city the second week. As well, that culminates in an event on Saturday, May 13th, where citizens will be able to bring down hazardous waste, tires, refrigeration units to our site down on Swan Falls to drop that off for us to properly dispose of. So I just want to update everybody on that. Usually I try to come in and give everybody a heads up before that happens. The second part of it is we wanted to come and talk to the City Council about an update to our contract. As of recently, we've seen an uptick in some third-party hauling companies that have been coming out and trying to provide service out within the city. If we look at our current franchise agreement, it's very broad in scope, and it includes solid waste collections for all premises in the city where solid waste is defined as all materials discarded for disposal. J&M has delivered and hauled off containers for property owners in the city for years under the current franchise agreement. This has traditionally been three-yard containers that we deliver to the property owner. The property owner then fills the container and J&M hauls it off. As well, we provide curbside bulky item pickup. A few years ago, J&M started doing large roll-off containers, originally due to the city's need for the sewer treatment plant. We've seen an increase in the need for this service within the city of CUNA as we've grown and prepared ourselves accordingly with the purchase of multiple trucks and varying container sizes. Due to this growth, there's also been this increased activity of dumpster for hire by other third parties that are not contracted by the city. These parties may not be insured, have safe quality equipment, properly dispose of the refuse material collected, or participate in the community to the extent that J&M has and will continue to do. As well, they are operating within our area of franchise agreement. For clarification, items such as self-haul where a property owner wants to haul excess or bulky items that won't fit within their regular service containers, that will still be allowed. Additionally, if a service is provided to a property owner, such as a tree trimming or a roofing job, and that service provider hauls the materials off, that's allowable as well. At any point where the property owner or service provider contract a third-party hauling service, that would be a service that was provided by J&M. So in our understanding that dumpster for hire services would fall within the franchise agreement, it's our goal to update the language of the current agreement to make enforcement easier for all parties going forward. So pretty basically, we're just looking to kind of update and clarify what we have there already, because we've seen this uptick in these third parties that are coming out here and trying to, you know, do roll-off boxes or bulky item pickups and so on and so forth. So with that, we're just looking for the council to kind of give us some direction on which way they want staff to go and how we would go about this. I'm open for any questions.
Okay, questions, comments.
Hey, Chad, I have a question.
Yeah.
So with these third parties, what's your idea of enforcement for this? Do we call the cops?
So we would take the main front line on the enforcement part of it, and we would have our attorney go ahead and send out a cease and desist letter to him at that point. If they continued to do these services, then we would have to sit down with staff and council and figure out what the next steps would be to, you know, fully enforce that.
So I guess my follow-on would be then, is there any way that if a private, you know, someone in their private capacity wanted someone to come and take something, right,
mm-hmm.
that might be something that J&M does as well?
Correct.
That they get certified with the city so that there's like a scope of limitations for what they're expected or what they can and cannot do, specifically say, is that kind of your idea or?
So I think what we're just looking to do is kind of get some, you know, more language in there that might talk about these specialty container services that we provide. So really what we're seeing, I mean, there's different options out there. There are like junk haulers that will go into your house and actually pull stuff out of your house or clean up your backyard or, you know, tree trimming or roofing. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to haul that away, then that's fine. It's when they're actually dropping some sort of container that's when it starts to become an issue.
Okay.
That's against, you know, what we're the services that we're providing. So we're just looking for that clarification in there. So it does make that enforcement a little bit easier.
Are you seeing the growing, I guess not an issue, but just people going out to a third-party vendor because they can't either get the dumpster on their house or whatever they need in a timely manner, or is it cost-effective, or what are we seeing that?
So what I've been seeing so far, because I've been researching, obviously, and seeing what they're doing out there, for us personally, we're about a 24-hour turnaround time. So if somebody calls me this morning, I'll have a container out to them tomorrow. So that's not an issue there. As of recently, we have ordered quite a few containers in varying sizes, all the way from 15 up to 30-yard containers. So we have plenty of containers. We have a lot of 3-yard containers, which is what we traditionally would service customers with. But, you know, as we've seen this need grow, we've got into some varying sizes that we didn't always traditionally have. And so with this new language, it would help to just kind of include, you know, an update saying, hey, now we have all these other items that is part of the same service, essentially. We're just got different size containers now. As far as their pricing goes, from what I've seen, they're generally more expensive. Then the other issue is they may not be disposing of it properly. Either they could potentially just dump it someplace illegally, or they may be taking it to landfills that are not Ada County landfills. So they could be taking it to Canyon County landfill, which would traditionally be a cheaper rate than what we participate in going to Ada County or IRWS. So, you know, there's just the variability of, are they insured? Do they have quality equipment, you know? Are they going to come back and pick the container up, or is it going to become a hassle for the, you know, homeowner that container sits there forever because they broke down and they couldn't get back to it? Whereas, again, our timing has generally been about 24-hour turnaround, 24 to 48 hours. But we're pretty diligent about getting out there as quickly as possible and getting it picked up. And as far as the amount of containers, we've got a lot of containers to be able to service any needs that people's homeowners might need.
Question.
Thank you.
Yes.
Chad, when this is all said and done, what we're talking about here is that information going to be mailed out to the residents so everybody's on the same sheet of music, so there's no guessing of what's changed?
We could definitely look at, you know, sending out some notification. One thing that we thought about doing as part of our process would be to get a website, get it updated, and then optimize that, because as I was going out and looking, you know, we've generally not had a website, just Facebook pages and stuff like that. But when you go out to look for dumpster rentals in CUNA, there's a lot of other ones that pop up. And I think that might be where people are getting these services from, because they just Google it or they ask Siri or whatever. And it doesn't come up with us necessarily as the first option. So they start going, as well as there has been a lot of advertising on Facebook Marketplace for these services from these third parties.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, and then you, construction boxes and stuff like that, you guys don't really have to deal with all
so
that, right?
So one thing that I've seen as of recently is there's a particular hauler that's one of the larger ones has been putting roll-off boxes in front of new construction homes and actually putting them out on the streets where it's not permitted and they're not hauling it to Ada County. I can verify that for sure. As far as, like, if there is a service provided where they're doing some sort of ancillary work above and beyond just picking a container up and hauling it. So like you see around town, a lot of these plywood boxes, and they come in, they unload it by hand and so on and so forth. We're not looking to tackle that. It's just the ones that are going to put out containers, any sort of dumpster, anything like that, where they're just dropping it, somebody's filling it quickly, and they're coming back and hauling it.
Okay, thank you. You were searching. Did you find something?
I did. But I did find J&M, which is about the fifth or sixth one down.
Web design is not my thing. Change it to I could pick up trash, okay?
A1 trash.
Yeah, you need to get a Google bomb on it. That'll get it to the top.
I don't have anything further.
Yeah, so I guess then the question for tonight is, do you want to have them come back with something?
Write the contract and then us review it.
Mark, did you have anything you wanted to chime in on that?
Yes, so Mark Bybee, city attorney. I've spoken with Heath Clark, J&M's attorney, about this some, and I don't think this will come out of left field. My concern, and I just think I'd relay to you guys, I don't think it's a legal concern. I think you can, clean up your ordinance, clean up the agreement with J&M, because I do think there is some ambiguity in there about, like, what's included within the solid waste component and what they should be collecting and where this roll-off service fits in that. We've experienced, my office has experienced in other communities, that you may get some political pushback from the development and the building community associated with including this within the franchise. And so I think J&M's position is that this already is included in the franchise, and we need to clean up the language to make it clear exactly what the scope of that is. And I think there's an argument for that, and there's a reason to clean it up. But it's also, if we go, depend on how far we go with it, you may be getting some guff from the building community about this.
If they already have contracts with other providers?
Exactly. Basically, you're limiting choice within CUNA for this service.
And that goes back to what I was saying about the enforcement part. I mean, we send a cease and desist letter. Are they going to be sending Ada County Sheriff out to?
I think that's.
What's the extent? What kind of enforcement does a contract provide in this kind of a situation?
Well, I think the enforcement would actually be what goes into our ordinance and how, if somebody is utilizing a different service. And we do have enforcement components for the regular daily trash pickup service that's provided. And it'd probably be something similar. I'd try and dovetail with what's already in place. I haven't looked at that. If you're asking me for that, I couldn't tell you exactly what that looks like right now in city code, but it'd probably mirror that similarly.
Is that something that we decide?
Because that's the franchise. We grant them the franchise, and we have an ordinance about waste collection within the city, and that's the enforcement component that as a city we enforce. To ensure, because basically the idea behind it is we want to make sure the community stays clean. And so we, as a city, you can either get in and provide the service yourself or you can franchise for it. The city of CUNA is elected to franchise for it and then provide some enforcement mechanism to make sure that people are abiding by the law and keeping the community clean. And the franchise is closely associated with that.
Is it, and this might sound funny, but isn't it kind of odd that we, the city, would supply a private company law enforcement ability? I mean, to me, this shouldn't fall within the laps of the Ada County Sheriff's Office or the CUNA Police Department. It seemed to me that the company would be better off putting a lien against that person rather than getting us involved law enforcement-wise.
I guess if there's another way to do it, I'm happy to look at that in the negotiations. They are providing a public service. Like that's ultimately what the franchise agreement is for, is it's basically saying this is a function that can fall within the scope of government, but we are franchising for that public service, essentially.
Okay.
And then if I may, I think, a little clarification on that is, in the past, traditionally, the code enforcement officer has kind of taken care of that. If we find one that's around town, then we let him know and he's gone and noticed them. Generally, I'm going to say that a large majority of these, that first letter, they're going to get the point. The handful of them that I've had actual conversations with in the past, they kind of want to, ruffle their feathers a little bit and be like, well, show me your contract, show me this. And I'm like, well, it's kind of your due diligence to do this work prior to starting a business before you, you know what all the rules are and so on and so forth. And generally, they have not come back, and I haven't had any issue with it. We just wanted something that, you know, again, both us and the city, and again, we'll take the lead on it the majority of the time, and, you know, we'll go ahead and have our attorneys send stuff out to these folks and then see what their response is at that point. And if we're getting a lot of pushback, then, you know, we can come back to the city and discuss with staff and council what the next move would be. But I think the majority of them is just going to be, they get that first letter and they say, okay, I get the point now.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Matt.
Yes.
Are there other cities around the Treasure Valley that have this type of agreement in place? My concern is if you have developers that are already on certain margins, then they show up and now they have to use the city's service. If it is more costly or isn't, then they're kind of subject to it, right?
As far as franchise agreements generally, yes, they're very common. The scope of services included in franchise agreements, I would be speaking out of turn if I tried to guess at what other cities are doing. I haven't looked into that.
And I can tell you from being in the industry and speaking with the other two major haulers within the Treasure Valley that they do have pretty – every city within the Treasure Valley as well as unincorporated Ada County has franchise agreements, and it is, you know, variable or very close to the same scope as to what we have here and what we're looking at. And I've had the same discussions with both of them as of recently. They're seeing the same uptick, and they're pursuing the same issues with their cities and their contracts.
Okay, so direction forward. Do you want them to bring back something for you to look at? Is that the...
Yeah, I'd like that.
John?
Yes.
That's it.
Okay.
So we'll have our attorney get some stuff drawn up and get it over to the city attorney and staff, and then we'll just go forward from there. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, public hearing, consideration on case number 2209AN, annexation, and 2204, lot split. Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. For the record, Troy Behunin, senior planner, CUNA Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street here in CUNA. So the application before you tonight this evening is just for the annexation. The lot split will follow at a subsequent meeting. And the applicant is seeking annexation into the city of CUNA, and they're seeking that approval using the R2 zone, which is our lowest residential density. Public Works conditionally supports this application, contingent that a prepaid EDU or equivalent dwelling unit sewer connection fee is purchased, coupled with the other conditions listed in the engineer's memo, which is also in your packet. Staff has reviewed the proposed annexation for compliance with CUNA City Code and Idaho State Statutes and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan, and should the council approve the annexation tonight, staff recommends the applicant be subject to the conditions and recommended conditions outlined in the staff memo. And if the council has any questions for the applicant, he is here tonight, and I will stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay, questions for Troy. All right. Seeing none right now. Did the applicant want to make a presentation?
No, sir.
Okay. All right. This is a public hearing. Is there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up to testify in this matter that wishes to do so? Okay. Troy, could you?
I just want to admit, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Rutherford and I are basically family, but I don't see any reason I can't make an honest decision on this, but I will step aside if the council wishes.
Can't do the right one.
Thank you.
Was there anybody else? All right, Scott Nicholas, if you would like to step forward and state your name and address for the record, please.
Yeah, yes, my name is Scott Nicholas, address 900 West Luana Lane in Cuna. I am the neighbor to the north of this property. Our property runs the complete distance of it. That's a keyhole property, so their access is an easement across our property for their ingress and egress. And we don't have any problem with the property being annexed. It definitely needs to be. Our concerns are we have a head gate box on that property, and our irrigation water runs across that property, and that we need to maintain our so we can get our water rights delivered to us every year.
Okay.
Then the next 2 points, which are a utility point of access for the split, and with more traffic up and down that access easement, that we need to work with the property owner and the property owner of the split or to get some type of maintenance so we aren't the only ones maintaining the road there so everybody can use. And that concludes my concerns on this property. Any questions?
Any questions?
No, sir. No, sir.
No, all right. Sir. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Jason Becker.
Jason Becker, 1301 North School. Homeowner since 2002. I wrote a letter to the planner that explained my concerns, so I'd refer to you to that if you have not seen that yet or if that's not part of the package. But I do want to, I was out of state. I came back for this meeting. It's important to me. So I want to emphasize three things. The traffic in the vicinity of Deer Flat, the road through the subdivision, I can see if we lean forward a little through our lens and see the future as we modernize and build and CUNA grows more and more. I see a circle in that subdivision with the good neighbor that I just spoke. And I would hate to see the traffic increase so much through that easement mentioned before when the road and the sidewalk goes right up to the fence on the west side. So I still don't understand why that easement even exists when there is access to the subdivision right there that's much better than that dirt road. It's paved. It's got a sidewalk. So that's the first point. And I also request permission to access the irrigation vault that was mentioned also. Prior to me moving in 2002, there was an irrigation ditch to my property from what I've heard from my neighbors, and it was filled in. So my yard looked like hell. I want my irrigation water so I can make the community look a little better, make my yard look a little better, and I don't have to wear out my well because that's how I have water. Lastly, the traffic from the easement road is already dangerous. There's a telephone pole to the right, so as someone's turning south on that road, it's already obscured, and people creep out in their car to look. And why I'm concerned, because my window oversees that access point to the paved road from the easement. I also can see the back because I'm the summit. I'm the high point of that area, and my house is 1.5 stories. So I see everything that goes on with my neighbors. So back to if this must be turned into some improved area, I'd like to see a pedestrian walkway through there that supports our community events too, which is the CUNA Race, CUNA Days, all that stuff. People run right down there, and that easement road feeds right into there. So if a pedestrian road is necessary to keep the kids, and I have seen those around the community too, where going to the middle school, the old high school, they have a pedestrian opening so the kids can walk through and they don't have to walk another half mile. But again, that's a case study, if you will, that it's been done in the city already, so I know it can be done. And I'd hate to lose that easement to the city or something. And again, that concerns me because I see those close calls as people try to access that road. It's just a crappy location. And with the development on Deer Flat and North School anyway, we have increased traffic on that 25-mile-an-hour road. So already the traffic's been increased, and now we're talking about increasing it even more. So that's of concern to me. And again, why I care is because I can see everything going on in that area. Thank you. Right. I can
any questions
for go any further if you want. Okay, right. Please refer to that letter. Much. Thank you.
All right, Danielle.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Councilman. My name is Danielle Horace, and for the record, 711 East Porter. I represent CUNA School District and the 40% of CUNA residents who are 18 and younger. So I'm here to let you know that our bond did not pass. So given that information, we have a real, I'm going to call it a crisis. I pressed the panic button 6 months ago when we did the math and we looked at the number of students projected in 10 years in CUNA. And these aren't imaginary students. These are students who will wake up in 10 years and there will be no school bus, there'll be no classroom and no teacher to teach them. That number is 2,700 students. So I'm here to tell you that while we love growth and we love serving students, we can't do it alone. We need the partnership of our community, we need the partnership of our developers, and we need yours. So I'm here to let you know, on behalf of CUNA School District, we cannot serve the students of this development. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and that is all I had signed up. Was there anybody else who wishes to testify in this matter? All right, did the applicant or Troy want to come up and address any of the concerns? No? Okay. All right, and so this was, I was a little confused on, it had mentioned at one point to build a new home, and then it also mentioned moving in a home. Troy, do you know which? Or if it was both, I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For the record, Troy Buchanan, Senior Planner, CUNA Planning and Zoning Department. So there is an existing home on the property right now. At a subsequent meeting, they'll bring forth a lot split request to see if it meets the eligibility for an original parcel. If it does and they are able to split the lot, then they would just build another home on the new one.
Okay.
I don't know why it says.
You're just basically adding a house.
Correct.
Okay. Any other questions? Whilst the public hearing is open.
Did you see the letter that he, was it in there? That the gentleman spoke about?
There was a couple. I don't remember which one was which. But they both related to
what he said,
what he was talking about.
It's on page 75 of the packet I have.
Okay.
All
looks landlocked to me.
Says that easement. Right, are you looking?
Yeah, I think that easement is the only thing that makes that accessible at all.
That one right here.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a question, Troy?
You bet.
Mr. Troy, has the property owner tried to address any of these, or do you know if they have addressed any of the concerns of the neighbors? Have they had a discussion about it, or?
That's a good question, Councilmember Bruce. Again, this is Troy Buchanan, Kino Planning and Zoning Department. So the letter from Mr. Becker is in your packet. That was received after after the neighborhood meeting was conducted. So it was included with the packet for tonight, and I couldn't tell you if they've actually reached out. I do know that the property that is there in question tonight for annexation, it does have an access easement already in place, and that is something that they're relying on currently.
Is there only one access in and out that we're talking about here? Because
correct.
They said there's more than one. They said there's a dirt road that 100 cars use.
I don't know what road that would be. This is a closed site. The other one that that Mr. Becker may have been referring to is from the subdivision directly to the north and west of this property, but that is a city subdivision, and it is an improved surface, but there's a perimeter fence around that from that subdivision. And they already have an access easement already in place for this parcel.
Can we bring up a picture of the area and then have Mr. Becker show us what he's talking about? The vehicles, sometimes numbering 100, using the dirt road.
Page 23.
She's going to bring up the map.
Sure.
And the other vehicles I mentioned, increasing the traffic on North School, were about the developed commercial property where there's a dental unit and like a strip mall kind of thing that's actually at North School and Deer Flat proper on the southwest side. That's what I'm talking about, the recent increase in traffic over the last 2 years.
Would you identify yourself on the record, please?
I'm Jason Becker. I live at 1301 North School Street. I've been a homeowner since 2002.
Won't be long now.
Hi.
Darrell wants to talk because I don't want to see that, but he wants to see that. I want to see a pedestrian.
Other side, please.
Right here. Excuse me. Right here. And this is also the location where I see people entering.
Sir.
Oh, excuse me. Let me orient here.
Sir, you're not on the record. You need to direct at the mic so you're recorded on the record, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
You got a laser pointer I can use now.
That'd be helpful.
You can use the mouse.
Oh, the mouse. Cool. Okay, there's north. Okay. These people access this road right here. My property is right here, my home. Again, I said it's the summit so I can see everything going on. The people accessing over right here from the dirt to the pavement is happening right here. There's also a telephone pole there that obstructs the view to the south, and that's what I'm talking about. Access from the easement to North School. Does that answer your question?
And are you talking about pedestrian access, people walking in?
I'm talking about people and vehicles all day long.
Vehicles?
Okay. Yeah, and you're talking about adding another home, so another family, again, which increases the way I'm looking at it. So that traffic on Luana Lane, that easement road, is going to increase if you approve that. Thank you.
Roy, does that access that Mr. Beckett's referring to fall within the property lines of this property we're trying to annex?
That's an excellent question, Councilmember Laraway. That is actually off property, as far as staff is aware. So it would not be encompassed within the bounds of this request. Tonight's request is only for annexation. The lot split discussion will take place at another city council meeting.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still not seeing a spot where a car could drive, and if they did drive, where were they going?
If there is something between the homes right here that are shown, if there's something behind these homes, that sounds like it's a subdivision issue rather than a 1299 North School Avenue issue. 1299 North School doesn't even touch the school
that
avenue.
That sounds
road.
Like something needs to be addressed anyway, even separately.
Right. Correct.
Shouldn't be accessing those homes from that.
But probably aside from this meeting.
But I mean, in theory, if this gentleman, the applicant, I'm not saying they have to, but if they put a fence around their property, that road still wouldn't interfere with their property.
That sounds reasonable.
Okay, thank you.
I have no further questions.
Yeah, I think we need to take a look at that separately and look at that and see what's going on there, because people shouldn't be driving through private property
correct.
To get to the back of their house.
Correct.
Okay. So take a note.
I will have a discussion with the applicant after this meeting.
Okay, thank you.
I think the applicant may want to say something.
Yes.
Is he on the list? Is he on the list? Was he on the list, Mr. Mayor?
Okay.
All right. All right.
Good evening. Thank you. Jason Rutherford, Action Real Estate, helping the Spencers. Spencers are the actual applicant. As far as it goes, off school, if you're driving off school, and I hear Jason's complaint, he wants a walkway across school. We're not adding multiple family here. We're asking for essentially to be annexed in tonight. So per se, we get our lot split, one additional home. That's not really, in my opinion, going to change any actual numbers. ACHD traffic count, if I remember right, was approximately 1,500. Two-way traffic per day down school. So I don't know if that's just a little bit overboard from our understanding for an off-site improvement. As far as just addressing a couple of these issues, the keyhole sub, we haven't really discussed exacts on, the Spencers don't necessarily want full traffic down Luana Lane. It's a private lane, approximately 50 foot wide, gravel. Who's using that? The Nichols and the Spencers currently. So they don't want to see a big traffic count going down that road either, because if it does attach into the existing subdivision to the west, that would create an instant access there, where I can understand Jason's complaint here of that's going to increase that traffic through that road, therefore causing a problem, because now if you've got Luana, the corner of Luana and school, that sub may start accessing that way versus go all the way out through Golden and such. So in my opinion, we're kind of arguing about the same thing here. We don't want to see an increased traffic count per se. We just want the annexation lot split to up the aesthetic beauties of just that area and to have a functional home there. As the school said, Danielle said. As far as the headgate box that Scott was referring to and access to that, and Jason was referring to that, we can't do anything about Jason's lack of access, et cetera, lack of water getting there. That was before our time. Spencer has actually purchased this property from Nichols approximately 2 years ago, and I'm probably wrong, but it's in that neck of the woods. So as far as the headgate box, I feel as if, and I can't speak for my client here, but I mean, they would contemplate this if it's the use is obvious and apparent with the water, right? So, and as far as maintenance, I believe that's in that same game. And that's about it. I feel like I've addressed the concerns.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Nothing? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
May I make a motion?
Yeah, to close.
You may.
Make a motion that we close the public hearing session with us.
I'll second it.
Motion made and seconded to close the public hearing portion and move on to deliberation. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
I think we're, with just annexing it in, we can address the other stuff with, once we get the plans.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much that other road that we've been looking at has anything to do with this one property. I think it's something that has to do with these other properties that have allowed it to happen. And as long as the headgate situation has been talked about and discussed.
Boise Cuna Irrigation District did also send a letter on this that said they had to maintain ability to access water, so that shouldn't be an issue other than what maybe happened years ago with filling in a ditch. And then they can work together on trying to figure that out.
Do you have anything, Matt?
No.
I make a motion that we approve case number 2209-AN.
Do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
We have a motion to approve case number 2209-AN. Is there any further discussion?
Do you have any concerns, Matt?
No, I'm good.
Okay, motion is made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? And that motion carries. That takes us to item B, consideration on case number 22-10-AN and 22-16-S. Troy, you're up again. And this is a public hearing. Is there anybody who wishes to testify in this matter who didn't get a chance to sign it?
I had one other question on the previous one. Are we going to have someone look at the street?
Yes, I asked Troy to make a note of that so they could check that out.
Perfect, thank you. Sorry to...
Okay, go ahead, Troy.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, Troy Buchanan, Senior Planner, Cuna Planning and Zoning Staff, 751 West 4th Street here in Cuna. The applications before you this evening request annexation and preliminary plat approval in order to subdivide approximately 4.75 acres into 25 total lots, which are 18 single-family lots and 7 common lots and 1 common driveway. The applicant proposes approximately 0.48 acres or 10.10% of the project as open space, and the gross density is proposed at 3.79 dwelling units per acre. The net density is proposed at 4.41. Public Works conditionally supports the Perdido Cove subdivision development with the conditions of that support listed in Section 5 of the engineer's memo, which is part of your packet. The Planning and Zoning Department agrees with Public Works recommendations. Staff has reviewed the proposed annexation of the preliminary plat to be in compliance with CUNA City Code and for compliance with Idaho State statutes and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan and the CUNA Comprehensive Plan map. And should the council approve the annexation of the pre-plat tonight, then staff would recommend that the applicant be subject to the proposed recommended conditions of approval outlined in staff's memo. The applicant is here tonight, and they do have a small presentation, which should be at the back of your of this packet. Should be the very last item. And I will stand for any questions that you have.
Okay, questions for Troy?
No, sir, not at this time.
Okay.
One question, Troy, before you leave, I apologize. What I couldn't find it in there. Is this going to be like an R8 or an R6?
R6. That's what they're proposing.
Thank you.
But as you can tell by the densities, they're well under that.
All right, and the applicant, Chase. Hello.
Hello. Good evening. Chase Craig, for the record, 2535 West Ardell, Cuna, Idaho, 83634. And you're pulling it up right now, I'm assuming? Perfect. So while that's getting pulled up, I just want to thank the city council members, mayor, and staff for having us at the meeting today. We're really excited about this particular project. It is the definition of infill. It's what I've been told from this city and many others. They're looking for more infill to get some redundancies in services and add some assets to the community itself. And this one, in my opinion, is the definition of that. We've got a piece of property that checks all the boxes as far as that's concerned. One of the most exciting pieces of this, I guess I'll just go through my drive-in here. Here's the team, awesome group at Kimley Horn, been very helpful. Obviously, we're looking for an annexation and rezone and preliminary plat. This is our timeline. We had our first neighborhood meeting on May 17th. And we made it here tonight, so we're super excited to be here. Here's the subject property. It's off of Ardell, so on the corner of Strobel and Ardell, or Shayla and Ardell, excuse me. And, I had the pleasure of selling most of those homes that this property backs up to back in 2007, 8, and 9. So very familiar. This property sat empty for at least the last 14 years or so. And, one of the reasons why is to come up with a plan, and I'll show you. Here's a future land use map. You guys are well aware of that. This meets the criteria as far as that's concerned. But with this being a corner property, I'll come back to this in just a second. One of the major reasons why this probably hasn't gone anywhere just yet is because, we have a hard corner, which means we have a lot of improvements that need to take place in order for this project to move forward. The sidewalks around the entire project, which I know there's a lot of kids. We're only a block away from Crimson Point Elementary, and there's a lot of kids that are walking and riding bikes right on a street with no sidewalk, and it's not as safe as it could be. And whether that's during the school hours or after school hours, we know kids are going to do what kids are going to do. So we're excited to be able to complete that with this project. Part of the cooperation with the existing neighbors, I don't know if I have, do I have the original? Is this the original plat here? Oh, it's not. Sorry. I think I had an original plat that we brought to them. One of the biggest pieces of feedback, here it is right here. So this is one of the original plats that we brought, the idea we brought to the community, and we got feedback, and essentially the feedback was, hey, ideally we have less homes backing up to our homes. And, obviously given the choice of more homes or less homes backing up to mine, I think I would agree with them. Less homes is ideal. So you can see we initially had most of these homes backing right up to their properties. Well, we were able to redesign this to where you can see, it's a little bit better image here. This entire, western half of the project is all common space. So, we only have a few of those home sites that are actually going to be impacted with homes with direct backyard neighbors. So we feel like we brought together a nice solution for the neighbors' concerns. In terms of the school district, we're excited to be able to partner with the school and, be a supportive partner as far as that's concerned. This is a short walk to the elementary school. And given the home site sizes here, you know, they're roughly 50 by 100, we do foresee, obviously we can't predict the future, but we do foresee a lot of potential empty nesters here looking for low maintenance backyards. You know, this property it backs up to is actually R3, which is a zoning that doesn't exist in CUNA anymore, as I'm sure the staff is well aware. So, you know, we see most of the people who have children going to schools looking for larger home sites, and we think we're going to see a lot of empty nester type buyers looking for a product like this. As you know, I've been doing my best to make sure everyone's well aware. You know, just as she mentioned, there's a crisis in the schools. There's also a crisis in homeownership and property values. You know, in 2020, the average sold price in CUNA was $327,000. By the end of 2021, it was $447,000. And currently, the average sold price is $481,000 in the city of CUNA. And that is driven almost exclusively by the lack of inventory. And so every home that we can bring forward does help with affordability over time. You know, the staff report, there is we're supportive of the conditions of approval. We did have a question. It's something we wanted to pose. It's not anything that we're necessarily tied to, but it's essentially, do we have a picture of this here, Tim? Yes, the sidewalks, correct. It's the sidewalk on Ardell. The staff recommends that there's 8-foot detached. Everything, thank you. I'm going to keep scrolling. Oh, here you go. So this is Shayla, and it currently is the 8-foot detached, and so we have no problem matching that here. On the other end, though, everything on Ardell, both east and west of our property, is 5-foot attached. And so that was the only thing we thought was a little weird, that we'd have one small section of Ardell that would be 8-foot detached. You know, we thought 5-foot made more sense. We're not going to argue if you guys think otherwise, but that was something we wanted to bring up. So in conclusion, we have a low-density project that, you know, even though we are going for R6, as he mentioned, we're well below that. It's a rare infill property. We're going to have a lot of redundancy with sewer, water, irrigation. Obviously, completing the sidewalks is going to be a great asset for the community. And, yeah, we are asking for your approval for this project this evening. And I will stand for any questions you have.
Thank you.
Okay, questions for Mr. Craig?
Just one. On the street you're talking about, this is all going to be a private road?
Yes, it has to be a private road. That it was not up to us because of Tim's the road expert. I would probably defer that question to him. Would you guys mind if he comes up and answers that?
If he wants to.
No, that'd be fine.
I think it'd be helpful because I don't want to misspeak. So.
Good evening. Tim Nicholson with Kimley Horn. We are at 1100 West Idaho Street, Suite 210 in Boise. And to answer your question, Councilman Larraway, the dimensional standards of the Ada County Highway District preclude us from being able to make a connection south of the intersection of Ardell and Shayla. There's just not enough physical property or distance away from the intersection and the street that goes to the east. And I'm drawing a blank here on the name. I apologize, but this street right here, there's not enough distance of separation between that street and Ardell to put a safe roadway connection in there and have the spacing required by the highway district. So that's why we went with the design that we came up with here. We got enough distance from Shayla to the west, to the west of Shayla, to be able to meet ACHD's requirements.
I'm assuming your HOA is going to take care of all the road improvements?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it'll be part of the CC&Rs for a private road maintenance agreement.
And I'm not making a suggestion, I'm just asking a question. If you had larger lots, less houses, would you have a road be able to go through?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good. Thank you. All right, this is a public hearing, and I'll ask once again, was there anybody else who wished to testify who didn't get a chance to sign in? Okay. Chase, was there Danielle?
Would you strike my name for
that? Oh, okay. You just like signing stuff tonight. All right. Well, that's all we had signed up to testify. So,
I had a question for Troy.
Yes.
I didn't see a school district response in here. Was it not received in time, or was it just, did they not provide one, do you know?
It's a good question, Councilmember Bruce.
There was something in there from the school district.
You did see it?
Robbie Reno.
What page?
The PNZ, about 91-ish, 90, 91.
Oh, that might have been it on the zoning minutes.
I think it was zoning minutes.
I saw something, but okay. I can't remember where.
It was a neutral.
Thank you, Troy. Do you have any other questions?
I don't have anything.
I make a motion that we close the public hearing and move to deliberation.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries.
Thoughts? Do you have any thoughts?
Well, like you said, it is a good infill project, and I am always appreciative of Mr. Craig's ability to and willingness to work with the school district.
That's what I was about to say. They always he always does well with the school district.
He's been a part of this community in many different ways for quite a few years, so we appreciate that.
And it's below, and you know, it's zoned R, or it's 4R6, but it's the development's below that. So,
I think that's what he said, R6.
Yeah,
and I think R6 is the adjoining neighborhood, too,
right? But the amount of lots that they have is less than what he could put in there.
And he mentioned that this is a short walk to Crimson Point. Does he mean Reed?
No, Crimson Point,
right? There's
like
Crimson
right.
Point. Reed's over here. That's a longer walk.
Yeah. I'm just thinking further down Ordell for some reason.
Yeah.
Mr. Biggs. I make a motion we approve case number 2210AN and 2216S and AC3, right? Four AC3 properties. Do we need to put in that? We can just do those case numbers, correct?
I second.
Motion's made and seconded, and that includes with the staff recommendations also, I assume?
Correct.
Okay. Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. That takes us to business item, case number 2304TE, time extension. Jessica Reed. Jessica. Oh, Doug.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. For the record, Doug Hansen, Kuna Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street. The applicant requests time extension approval for the Caspian Subdivision Number 2 final plat, as they will be unable to record the final plat prior to the required timeline of June 10th, 2023, due to nationwide shortages of construction materials, as well as unexpected delays in construction progression and agency processing times. Upon review, staff has determined this time extension request to be compliant with CUNA City Code Title 6, Chapter 3, and Idaho Code Title 6765, and would recommend council approve case number 23-04-TE.
Okay. Questions, comments?
Yes. Doug, is this their first extension?
Councilman Leway, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, yes, this would be their first extension for this plat.
And is this extension for 1 year?
Yep, this would give them 1 year from the date of approval to record the final plat phase for Caspian number 2.
Thank you.
Any thoughts?
Okay.
Matt, anything? I'll make a motion we approve case number 23-04-TE.
Second. Motion's made and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And that motion carries. Item B, discussion and direction from council on surplus sheds. Bobby Withrow.
Mayor, council, for the record, Bobby Withrow. 333 Short Line. So as you know, a couple weeks ago we put the sheds up for, or well, about a month ago we put them up for auction. Nobody ended up bidding on them. So now we're coming to you to get direction on how we want to move forward. A couple options are we can lower our minimum bid to probably $3,000 or $3,500. Then I think we can get some takers. We can also donate the sheds to youth activities in the community. I have been hit up by a couple of them asking what we are doing with them. And my response then was, well, we're going to auction them off. So when you see them available, if you can afford them, you know, put in a bid. So obviously something wasn't, or it wasn't in there. Budget, but that is still another option we can go. So right now we just want to discuss it with you guys and see what you guys want, see how you guys want us to move forward with this.
I think the donation thing is a great idea.
Yeah, I think
I was just thinking off the top of my head, I walk by it every single day, the shed or the ticketing area that they use at CUNA High School has a big hole in the side of it.
Yeah.
And they haven't used it in probably 2 or 3 years. But it's a similar shape kind of building. It would be kind of nice to have something like that.
How many buildings do you have left?
I think...
Chris Ingles, for the record. I think we put up seven for auction.
Yeah, seven for auction.
I think we kept the yellow ones.
Mm-hmm. We were going to keep a couple for city storage and stuff, so we had seven up for auction.
Will we, Mayo?
Yes.
Will we need anything for the new fields that were over at Zamzos?
We may need one or two, yes. So we might not donate all of the sheds. We may try and keep a couple for over there for storage.
If council wants to donate... Probably direction to staff on whether you want the requesting entities who would like the donation, if you want that to come back to council for decision. It's very possible if we have 5 units available, we'll have more than 5 requests. So it would be helpful for you to give us direction on how you want us to handle those requests.
Could get sticky, couldn't it? I'm all for donating them if that's the best thing to do for the city. The ticket booth that Matt's referring to, if the school needs them, donate them to the school. But I know they could get sticky because then everybody was going to raise their hand. What about us? What about us?
Yeah, Councilman Laraway, we wanted to put an asterisk by that. By it needed to be a nonprofit or youth organization. So something definitely dealing with the kids. Which at this point, the school district would qualify for that. So,
and then they have like youth Optimus Sports, things like that.
KPAL and KYSBA. KPAL. Those are the two groups that reached out to me before.
I think, it was KYSBA, KPAL, and then the
Optimus football.
Lacrosse. Yeah. And I know the school district. We could have more. I mean, staff, we did talk about, like, if we had more, just doing a drawing, you know. If we have 10 people and or 10 organizations and 10 sheds, then we would just do a drawing for those, if council was agreeable.
Is there a, Danielle is here, that we could ask if that's something that the school district would like to throw their name in the hat for officially?
I think that would be my preference, is to because we had a couple of pretty worthy groups that had asked. I think that that's certainly appropriate. I would like to see the school district get one or two if that's their wish and they have a use for them. And then beyond that, I think if it gets to that point, we can just have somebody write up what it is they need them for and pick the most appropriate.
That'd be good.
And the most was it need.
Did you have three?
That equipment gets expensive, so that'd be great.
So we have, that would be five right there. If the school district could utilize two, there's been three requests, KYSBA, KPAL, and lacrosse. That would be the five units right there.
Okay.
So we just let Danielle know that she's getting two sheds and she needs to pick them up.
Did you drive a pickup or a car?
Do you have a trailer?
You guys good with that? Or?
Yes. Let's just see where that goes, and if that doesn't work out, then we'll figure something out beyond that.
Okay.
Awesome.
If we can hold for just a minute, my computer decided to do an update in the middle of the meeting.
You want to take a couple-minute recess?
What's that?
Yeah, her computer's resetting. Can we take a couple-minute recess?
And sure. All right, we'll take a 3 or 4 minute recess while the computer loads up again.
Thank you.
Unless it's a condition caused by a squirrel choosing a line, and then they might be longer.
Come on, Andrew.
All right, item C, direction to staff for mitigating capacity issues for the Kuna School District as a result of the current city planning and development. Well, as we all know, the bond didn't pass, and so we need to do everything we can to assist the school district. We have some things in the works, but Council can certainly have a, if Council has any ideas, we're certainly happy to work with that or move in any direction you choose.
I just kind of wanted us to discuss it some, right, because I think we hear a lot about it in the community with the bond not passing and then continuing to put, the bulk of the burden on the taxpayers gotten to a certain extent. I hear a lot about it. And so I just wanted different thoughts from you, from Matt. I didn't know Greg wasn't going to be here. I always like his opinion as well. Just what your thoughts are. We've tried a lot of different things that we kind of worked through. Certain bills have failed in the legislature. The bond failed. Just to get your guys' input on what you think.
I think, like we talked before, this all comes down to one case was good to go, and then the next case didn't work out so well, so we're kind of stuck in the middle about which court case is going to pan out, if I'm not mistaken, Mark.
Sorry, I'm not sure which court case you're referring to in particular.
I thought at one point in time the mitigation was fought out in court, but the court considered it part of a impact fee, and they ruled against it.
I think you're referring to a Blaine County decision that was associated with this. So that would be a district court level decision. This is my memory trying to keep up on this, but I think you're referencing there's a Blaine County district court decision related to, it wasn't, from my recollection, specifically school district mitigation fees, but it was something akin to a fee that wasn't permissible under other parts of code that kind of looked like an impact fee, and there's language in that Blaine County case about how that essentially they perceive this fee. I wish I could remember what it's for. I'm thinking it might have been something associated with their workforce housing problem there, and that the court ended up considering this fee structure that the city had put in place or whatever entity had put in place there to be an impact fee and struck it down as an unlawful tax, essentially, because they're adopting fees that weren't permissible under IDEPA. Being a district court case of another jurisdiction, that isn't binding authority here, but I will say, you know, as far as decision-making tends to go, the Supreme Court, when a problem comes up to it, it will tend to look at, okay, what district court decisions are out there that have looked at similar problems to this, where have we landed, and where do we want to go with this? And so, like, do we support what these district courts are doing? Have they gotten it wrong? You know, and so looking at what district courts are doing can be informative, but if it's not in our district, we're in the 4th district here, and I think Blaine County is in the 5th. It's not binding, but it is persuasive as to what could happen here.
So technically, at our level, there's not much we can do. Even if we all raise our hand and say, yeah, we want to start mitigation fees, there's nothing we can do either way.
If you were to, I don't know how much you want me to say on this, in this setting, if you put in mitigation fees, that there's the risk of whether or not you can do that. I'll kind of leave it at that. Either statutes that we've talked about before and whether or not that's truly something that can legally be done is a question, and I think there could be if the council proceeded with that, there could be litigation associated with whether those fees are legally permissible. And I will say from some of the legislative activity I observed this year, I do think the legislature has spoken on their feeling about this subject. There was some legislation proposed that essentially was going to deny any jurisdiction other than cities and counties from having impact fees, which would have been quite significant because there's a lot of government districts that can do them right now. And once we kind of dug into that, the legislator who proposed that said, oh, I didn't realize I was taking it from some that already have it, but basically I just don't want school districts doing this. He thought that there's school districts that were already collecting impact fees or something that looked like an impact fee, and he was making it clear that absolutely not, basically. And he was almost took away – he proposed legislation that would have taken away impact fees from other government districts, not understanding the scope of the legislation he proposed.
So the legislature actually hasn't acted on anything called mitigation fees.
No.
They've always attached it to impact fees.
There's this language in LUPA that talks about mitigating the effects of impacts on the school district, and that on school districts, and it shortly after that it talks about adopting fees, but then it cites back to IDIFA, which is an impact fee authority. It's kind of a confusing passage, and I think that's where is there something called mitigation fees that are separate from impact fees? Is that a thing?
Yeah, that's because it has two different sections. You know, one section of code says it can collect mitigation fees for school districts, but then impact fees doesn't have them listed as a collection body. Kind of my thought was I'd like, and I don't think we should just collect fees and give them to the school district, right? I think maybe having a plan, a capacity plan, what does that look like? Because as we continue to grow, they're not going to have anywhere to put the kids, right? So what does that look like? Is that mobile units on land with that can bus them to there? Because an impact fee is not going to build a school. They're $30 million. So anyone that's thinking like that is I believe, thinking the wrong path. But my thought was, what are we going to do? Are we going to continue to approve developments until they're packed so tight that they can't move? Where's the give? Because that's their only way to build schools. So is there another, maybe a step stone? Like, what is a capacity plan? What are they going to do? That was my thought, is let's see how that looks before we make a decision. You know, is there land that the school has? Is there land that the city has? Can the city even do anything like that with mobile units or collect, fees to help with that, just to ease the burden for them? Or are we just kind of...
I'm not sure I understand what you're suggesting.
So my thought is, if they had some type of capacity plan that fees only went for that plan, which would be schools and possibly buses, right? They would handle teachers other way, but just to ease the burden in some of the classrooms. If the school district, if we collect those fees, you're saying it seems more like an impact fee, but can the city do that where maybe they have a piece of land where they could put the units there and lease it to the school district?
So you're just talking about making land available?
Or just having, so they can ease the burden of capacity. Mobile units, access for buses.
You're talking about buses, you're talking about land. Where are the funds coming from to purchase the...
City has land and the school district has land. I'm just thinking of a place to put the kids. You know, how do we ease the burden there? Do we say we're not going to approve any more developments? Do we collect fees? The bonds failed, right? So at some point, we are contributing to this burden.
The dam's going to break at some point, I would think. Right. I guess I'm going to...
Yeah, but...
What if... So we all know that, I guess, the legislature is not going to help in this means. It went to committee and it failed again, even the talk about impact fees. We haven't had those since 2006. So they leave it to the cities and the school districts. They run a bond. The bond fails. And now we're sitting here with no other options. So is there some kind of way, like Councilman Bruce is talking about, or do we just say, okay, well, stop approving developments? And then we run the risk of getting, litigation there too. It's kind of a no-win situation, it seems like.
Well, I guess what I was trying to ask, are we suggesting using city funds to purchase?
Well, not to purchase land. If we had land and we did decide to collect a fee for a mobile unit just for something, the school district would have to come up with a capacity plan, right? Mm-hmm. And decide where they're going to put these kids to ease the burden on the school district until they can pass a bond or whatever they need to do. So that was my broad thinking. Like, maybe the best option is to have them come up with some type of capacity plan, and then we can kind of discuss it from there.
Coming up with a capacity plan, but if at the base of this is the city implementing and collecting a fee to fund whatever this capacity plan is, you have to have authority granted from the legislature to pursue the fee. If you adopt a fee as a local jurisdiction that you don't have fee authority for, there is plenty of case law on that you can't do it. Okay. City of Haley is versus Loomis v. City of Haley is one that comes to mind. Brewster v. Pocatello is another one. Both instances of fees being adopted by cities. If I remember right, Brewster was one where the city actually got slapped by the court pretty hard for a fee that they'd put in place that the city determined, the court determined that you've never been granted that authority from the legislature, you can't adopt that, therefore this fee is actually an unlawful tax. I remember on Loomis, the city was actually, the fee adopted there was actually one that was found to be okay. If I remember right, it was something associated with an enterprise fund for sewer. I think it might have been sewer hookup fees that were found to be okay. And so those are instances of, but we have authority allowing for the fees for what happened in Loomis v. City Haley. Brewster was the example of where, no, you can't do this. And so it's pretty clear if the legislature hasn't granted a city a local jurisdiction authority to adopt a fee, and then it adopts a fee, that fee is very likely to be determined to be an unlawful tax.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. Thank you.
Well, I think so. We're going to get back together with the school district and hash through a bunch of different things. I know that a lot of the talk at some of the, well, so the city council meeting that they had in Meridian, where there was a request to see what they could do for mitigation fees when the CUNA school district went there. There was, well, there was talk about the school district has a means to get funding to expand their services, and they had not yet gone to bond, and they hadn't tried that yet. Well, now we're beyond that.
All right.
The other one is that school districts can put in place portable units to help mitigate overpopulation, and then when it gets to that point, then they can bond to build another school. And they're all, I mean, those means are there. I did listen to the school board meeting the other night and commend them for really thinking outside the box and trying to figure out different ways of how to move forward. And part of that is looking at their capital plan again and figure out different ways of funding. But I still think the best route is for our group with the school district group to meet and talk through some of this stuff and see if we can't come up with some kind of a solution, whatever that is. We can certainly direct staff to ask any developers that come in to see what they can do to work something out with the school district. I don't know that we can force anything, so
yeah.
We can do what we can there. We can also see what we can come up with for the school district does have some properties, like you say. We can see what we can do to help make certain that, and we do this with development, we make certain that there is sewer and water services when those properties are in the middle of a subdivision. We make sure that they have that capacity there. We can work with the school district on that type of thing. I don't know. We have a bunch of other ideas. I think we're just going to hash through them with the school district and figure out where we're at. I was hopeful that we could. I didn't really figure we would get impact fees with the legislature this year. I was hoping that we would get a hearing so that we could at least bring that out. They didn't run the piece of legislation that Mark helped draft and that.
Thank you, by the way.
This year, but I mean, that's just something we're going to have to keep taking a stab at. Until they actually have a hearing and a conversation about it, we won't know for certain what it is they expect or if they're just heck-bent on not allowing school districts to get impact fees. And that's kind of been the gist of it. But I really think that when they see that legislature spends a lot of time working on trying to reduce property taxes. Well, the best way to reduce property taxes is through impact fees to help it where you don't have to spend so much for the people that live there. So for me, it's more important to have a home and make it to where the people that live in that home can afford to keep their home, i.e. cutting property tax prices down and that type of thing. People that come in and they want to build a new home, they're going to have to pay into that impact fee fund so that they buy into the system. That's the way it's always worked. That's the way it is with police and fire and parks, and you're buying into a system. So it's not a tax, and that's another thing that the legislators seem to like to say. At some point, we've got to figure out a way to soften them up and let them even if they want to restrict what that impact fee is. I mean, you want an impact fee to cover the full impact. But if they're not going to allow that, even if they allow the impact fee to cover half of the impact or something, I don't know what it is, but we got to get a start somewhere. So
I just thank you. I just think it's important that the community knows that we're addressing it. You know, so thank you. Thank you for the conversation.
Question for Doug.
Mayor, if I may. Oh, sorry, you had a question?
Yeah, a question for Doug. You might not know, but there's that old STEM school that runs on Hubbard across from
High STEM.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that place is abandoned. What are they going to do with that? Can't we use that? I guess we can't because that's not ours, but.
So that would have been for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, that would have been a private institution on a private piece of property, so the city would have no real jurisdiction as to how that land would be used. It would be contingent upon what the property owner wanted to do with it.
So is it just going to stay abandoned?
There is some potential that the property could redevelop, but that's all up to the property owner.
I just wondered if they might have an agreement to let the school use it because there's four big pods there that are empty. Anyway, moving on.
Thank you for taking the time to discuss it with me.
Sure, no problem. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Mark?
I don't need to be the last word. I'm good.
All right, Redcliffe Development Default. Oh, Doug Hansen.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council members. For the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, 751 West 4th Street, CUNA, Idaho, 83634. Resolution number R27, 2014, was approved by the City Council on May 6th, 2014, authorizing the CUNA City Engineer to accept a cash deposit in the amount of $64,400 in lieu of construction for the Profile Ridge Merrill Family Center subdivision under certain terms and conditions so the final plat could be recorded prior to completion of an off-site bicycle pedestrian pathway. Based upon Redcliffe Development's failure to appear and show cause as to why the $64,400 should not be forfeited, staff requests City Council order the forfeiture of these funds and direct and authorize that the $64,400 be removed from the city agency fund and be moved to the city's general fund and earmarked for future public pathway and or open space improvements. This request is made due to the failure of Redcliffe Development to comply with the conditions as set forth in Resolution R27, 2014. After official notice for the default hearing to show cause was sent on February 28, 2003, Kim Scott, who identified herself as the assistant to Corey Swain, former principal of Redcliffe Development, on March 2, 2023, asked staff to provide a copy of the financial guarantee as they were not certain they posted the bond. At this time, staff requested advisement from legal, and it was determined that resolution number R27, 2014, did not call for a bond, and it was a cash deposit to be held by the city. Staff unintentionally failed to provide an answer to Ms. Scott. Ms. Scott was provided a copy of this packet and an answer to her question on April 13, 2023, with a copy of tonight's packet that is before you, and since that point in time, there has been no response. Council can make their decision this evening to order the forfeiture of these funds and direct and authorize that the $64,400 be removed from the city's agency fund and be moved to the city's general fund and earmarked for future public pathway and or open space improvements, or if they desire, table the item to a date certain in order to provide representatives of the defunct Redcliffe Development more time to provide information. I will stand by for any questions.
Okay. Questions for Doug?
There's nothing else in the packet. It's just this.
Mark Bybee, city attorney. So this is follow-up in that brief hearing we had last public meeting about this $64,000. And whether it's clear from that, I wanted to specify that since that hearing, Doug had realized that he had had a question from them about, hey, like, what's this bond you're talking about, not realizing they'd actually posted cash with the city and not a bond. Doug's provided them information since our last hearing saying actually you posted cash. That was on the 13th. And we still haven't heard anything. And I guess really ultimately their request right now is, do you want to proceed with saying, look, they didn't appear at the hearing. They haven't responded. This former resolution provided that the funds would be forfeited if they didn't provide the improvements. And you could just move forward of saying, yep, funds forfeited, therefore move the cash out of the city's agency fund, which is essentially, Jared could correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically a trust account, is my understanding, where we hold other people's money in trust into the general fund. That's a significant move because it's saying no longer their money, now our money, because you didn't abide by this, you didn't come and show why you didn't abide by the resolution terms, therefore it's being moved and earmarked for the project, a project similar to what you were supposed to have been provided, which you did not provide. And so if you make the decision tonight, you're saying you had your chance, you didn't show up. However, since we just gave one final update to this person on the 13th, Doug's asking, do you want to make a decision tonight or give them one more meeting time to show up?
And so I would think this was at least 9 years ago. The cost to do what improvement that they were supposed to do was covered initially with the $64,400. My guess is that $64,400 is probably insufficient to even finish that project at this point after the increase in construction costs and everything. So I guess the question is, do we want to wait and see if they're actually going to do the project or
I don't even think the question is whether they'll do the projects. It's just whether or not they're going to come and show some good reason that we haven't considered as to why these funds shouldn't be forfeited.
Okay.
I don't think the probability of them doing the project is even within the realm of reason anymore.
Okay. All right. Very good.
And actually, I after him reading about who it is, I do know that person, so I need to probably recuse myself.
Well, don't let them buy you lunch.
Yeah, I don't. I don't want to make a decision.
Doug, if this money gets pulled out and there are projects that are not done, is the city on the hook to pay for those projects to bring it up to code?
Councilman Laraway, so for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning and Zoning, this money would be pulled and it would be specifically earmarked for other pathways and open space projects, so we couldn't just spend it anywhere we wanted. It would have to be utilized for the same type of use that these funds were initially provided that cash deposit for. I really don't think it's feasible in any way for us to be able to require that a pathway still be installed across the property. The location of this pathway was actually going to be across the frontage on Deer Flat of the dairy property, the Robinson Dairy. So with the time that has lapsed and the improvements would be the required, I don't think it would be possible to complete this project.
Okay.
Thank
that
you.
Makes sense.
Councilmember Bruce, I was going to mention, unless you have a financial or pecuniary interest in this decision, I don't think you actually have to recuse yourself from it. Just letting you know that.
Yeah, no, none of that.
I think we've had.
You still can if you'd like to.
Yeah.
I think we've given them enough time.
Yeah, I personally don't see any reason to prolong it.
You said it's been 9 years?
Doug's recommendation.
Yeah, it was in 2014 anyway.
Originally, yeah.
Resolution 27, so.
Councilmember Bruce, for the record, Doug Hansen, CUNA Planning Zoning. Are you recusing yourself?
Yes.
Okay, so we will have the table.
And we don't have a quorum.
So we don't have enough to vote, so it's going to have to automatically table for a date certain. Because there's not enough to,
okay.
We'll have to wait for a fuller council. So I think it will have to table next meeting, probably seems reasonable.
Maybe so a second?
Yeah.
Make
so,
a motion we table it.
If we could get a motion to table for that date then.
And May 2nd.
May 2nd.
So moved. Does that work? Make a motion to table till May 2nd?
Okay.
Yes, May 2nd.
Okay.
All right, we have a motion.
Motion to table it until May 2nd. Let's do it this way. Make a motion to table Red Cliff Development default until May 2nd.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. All right, proclamations. Month of the Military Child Proclamation is first. Whereas April is the month of the military child, and whereas the month of the military child is a special month to recognize and pay tribute to military families and their children for the daily sacrifices made and for their commitment, courage, and unconditional support for our armed forces. Whereas there are more than 1.6 million military children who face many challenges and unique experiences as a result of their parents' service. And whereas Air Force Blue, Army Green, Marine Red, Navy Blue, and Coast Guard Blue are all thought to combine as a single color, purple. And whereas a month-long salute will recognize that military children serve too, and citizens of CUNA will be afforded the opportunity to honor these children by wearing the color purple. Now, therefore, I, Joe Steer, Mayor of the City of CUNA, Idaho, do hereby proclaim April 2023 as Month of the Military Child. And we invite all of the CUNA citizens to honor our military children by wearing purple each Friday in April. And Greta, did you want to come get this? Greta, thank you so much. Greta does, she takes the lead for the city on a lot of things, military, because of her husband's service and her service and the background. So we appreciate all the extra effort that you put in for the city of CUNA. Thank you so much for taking the lead on these things.
Thank you.
All right, Denim Day Proclamation. Whereas the United States government has declared April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and the WCA, Women and Children's Alliance, has declared April 26, 2023 as Denim Day. And whereas both events are intended to draw attention to the fact that sexual assault remains a serious issue in our society, whereas harmful attitudes about sexual assault allow these crimes to persist and allow survivors to be re-victimized, and whereas Sexual Assault Awareness Month and Denim Day were also instituted to call attention to misconceptions and misinformation about rape and sexual assault and the problem that many in society remain disturbingly uninformed with the respect of issues to assault, and whereas every 68 seconds someone in America is sexually assaulted and approximately 1 in 6 women are raped during their lifetime, and whereas with proper education on the matter, there is compelling evidence that we can be successful in reducing incidents of this alarming and psychologically damaging crime. Whereas the city of CUNA is an important partner in the efforts of the WCA, Women Children's Alliance, to educate the true impact of rape and sexual assault. Now, therefore, I, Joe Steer, Mayor of the City of CUNA, do hereby proclaim April 26, 2023 as Denim Day. And we have some representatives here.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We like smart water.
Okay. Well, I think we can get through that really quick. Or you got to go.
Oh, I got to go. Yeah, I drank this.
Oh, yeah.
Since the beginning of the meeting.
Just use that.
What? We turn off the microphone. Uh-oh. Give me a good phone. I'm getting a photobomb this everywhere. Different angles.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, that is mind-blowing.
Oh, do you need more?
No, I need to.
Oh, yeah, all right. Yes. Well, I didn't realize it was like that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I would hold it through this.
He's got to use the...
Give him the bottle.
He drank too big of a water. See, and I only do a half of one of these.
I can't represent you in a person's capacity.
Is that the last one?
Yeah, the ordinance. Did you just start to reset?
What's that? You need a...
Oh, you got to log in. Here you go. I think it's right there.
Chamber one.
Exclamation.
Is it just exclamation?
Chamber one, yeah. Yeah, I'll do it.
I have a doctor appointment on Wednesday or tomorrow. I started getting double vision.
Oh, that's not good.
When you're driving, I've got to close one eye. And it's just once, twice a day now. For about a minute and a half. It's like,
can you see okay with your glasses except for when it happens? Or?
I can't even read that anymore.
Oh.
I just got them. That's 6 months ago. It's called age.
Has your wife been being mean to you?
She puts up with me. She puts up with me.
Yeah, that's probably good.
We just celebrated 18 years. It's crazy.
Nice.
And 25 together. 25 together and 18 married. He drank two of those? Did he fill that thing back up?
Is he stuck? Yeah. How much water did he drink?
Yeah. I don't know.
Can we have Chief go check on him, make sure he didn't pass out the bathroom? Call it a welfare check.
Chief, do a welfare check. Chief, we may need you to do a welfare check.
Anyway.
I'll call somebody.
Oh, no, we're good.
He's back.
All right. Ordinance 8A, consideration to approve Ordinance 2023-14, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of CUNA making certain findings and amending subsection 2, subsection 6, chapter 1, title 5 of CUNA City Code by the addition of public utility lot and to the lot types definition, and by the addition of public utility lot as an exclusion to the subdivision definition, and amending Section 3, Chapter 3, Title 5 of CUNA City Code, amending the official height and area standards table by adding a technical addition, and adding Section 5, Chapter 16, Title 5 of the CUNA City Code, providing for public utility lot splits and providing a severability clause and directing the city clerk and providing an effective date. And this is the one that we had talked about last meeting, I believe. So
they corrected it, right?
Yeah.
I make a motion that we waive three readings of Ordinance 2023-14.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to waive the three readings. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Make a motion that we approve Ordinance 2023-14.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Aye.
Councilmember Larraway?
Yes.
And that motion carries. And summary public education.
Make a motion that we approve the summary publication of Ordinance 2023-14.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And that motion carries. We do have an executive session. We need a motion to go to the cite the Idaho State Code, please.
I make a motion that we adjourn to executive session under Idaho State Code 74-206F.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Bruce?
Aye.
Councilmember Biggs?
Aye.
Councilmember Larraway?
Yes.
And that motion carries. And we need, who all do we need in there? We need Mark and Paul.